Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Board Gaming Doctor. My name is Phil, and I'll be your Board Game Doctor today. This is going to be the Rosenblog for March 2024, and we've got a jam-packed podcast here for you. I'm going to keep the podcast as a whole for the podcast audio version, but I will break up the YouTube video versions. As a quick outline over all of the podcast and videos, we're going to go over some recent news, and there's been a lot of news for Rosenberg Games. I'm going to go into a full review of Mercator, one of Rosenberg's earliest big box games that does not receive a lot of love these days. And then finally, I'm going to go into the top 10 farming games that are not Rosenberg games at all. And these are the top 10 games as dictated by Board Game Geek, with some caveats there. Stay tuned for that top 10 list. So let's get into the news first. There's been a lot of news in the past month regarding Rosenberg games. And we will start with first that Devere, the board game publisher, made an announcement that they will be publishing Plantanubo and give it an English version. Not that the game needed it since it is language independent, but that will mean a wider distribution of the game. It's being published into other languages as well. And so the benefit is that it will be more widely available, at least here locally for me in the United States, and definitely elsewhere as well. I still need to play this game, obviously. If you are a regular follower of the channel, you know that I have been anticipating this game for a while, and it's been a little too expensive for me to try it in person just to see if I like it. Even though it does have Rosenberg's name on it, I still want to at least try it, perhaps virtually, before I make the plunge and buy this game. But perhaps this release from Devere will make it a little bit cheaper so I can buy it physically and try it there. And the same goes for Tangram City, so hopefully some reviews will come out for both of these games very soon. At least the Devere version, I believe it will be made available in about September-October time, around Essen time or so, for an English release. So here's to hoping that that comes in on time. Next, for all of those, including me, who love playing games on Board Game Arena, two Rosenberg games have been released into public alpha testing. If you're not familiar with how that works, games that are in development on Board Game Arena need to go over various play testings to make sure that the UI and the rules and everything are legitimate and making sense, and any bugs are crushed before it is released in subsequent order from alpha testing to beta to full release. Earlier this month, the Norwegians, the big expansion to A Feast for Odin, was released to Board Game Arena in public alpha, featuring not only the full expansion material, including new boards, occupation cards, pieces, etc., but also the options to play with the mini expansion 2, and an optional ban list for islands and occupations from the whole set. This seems like a big step towards balancing the game for competitive play, in addition to the fact that the expansion opens up new strategies, which I'm really excited to get into. Despite my thoughts about the base game, which I've previously talked about on the channel, I've kind of felt like the base game felt linear when it came to strategies, which is probably not the case, but that's how it came across to me. But despite my feeling that it still projected me to 50 plays of it, 50 plus plays of it already, and so I know that this game is a favorite game of all time for many people. And if it isn't my favorite Rosenberg or favorite game of all time, and I've played it 50 plus times already, then the base game is obviously really good, and I'm really excited to see both just the casual and competitive play expand with this expansion being more widely available on Board Game Arena. And yeah, can't wait to see how that turns out. The other game more recently released into public alpha, literally a couple of days ago before this recording, is one of my favorite games of all time. Glass Road is also there on public alpha on Board Game Arena. So I've been following the development of this game from behind the scenes before it has come to public alpha. And I can say that it has taken years for this game to come to the point where it's now at, which when I saw this become a reality where I could play multiplayer on public alpha and subsequently as this game is developed and released fully, this huge step was quite emotional for me to see. I believe that the game license was granted probably 4 or 5 years ago, and development had been on and off for this game for that period of time, and so an adaptation of Glass Road on Board Game Arena, from what I can tell, is perhaps not as straightforward as other games, considering the semi-simultaneous play, knowing the order of operations when you play cards, etc. And I can say that I have been able to get a couple of games started, and I'm very impressed with the UI thus far with this particular adaptation. So kudos to Sergio, the developer of this game on Board Game Arena. My sincere gratitude for working on this game thus far and bringing it to this point. One of my favorite games for sure, and I can't wait to play this game more, multiplayer especially. I think the majority of my plays have been solo, which feels like a different game compared to the multiplayer, as some Rosenberg games are. And so here's to speedy testing and hoping to really dig into, competitively as well as just casually, one of my treasured games of all time, finally on Board Game Arena. So finally, speaking of Glass Road, another big, you know, drop in news, for me at least, was more news on the fabled Black Forest, or Glass Road 2.0, which I've covered, I think, about a year ago or so on the channel. And this particular post was teased, I think, the day after Glass Road was announced on Public Alpha. This bit of information on Black Forest was teased by someone who got to play the prototype, I presume the prototype, with a picture of it posted on Board Game Geek, saying that this game is slated for an Essen release later this year. Looking at the picture, this definitely looks like a version of Glass Road, with the resource wheels, tableau building, with two different types of building tiles, I think, landscape tiles as well on your tableau. But instead of playing cards from your hand like you do in Glass Road, it looks like you're taking actions on a central board with a lot of different interconnected routes and modular setup of the game as well. And so this traveling around is, maybe this is just because this game is fresh on my mind, but it kind of gives me vibes from Mercator and the way that you travel around on that board, except in the Black Forest area of Germany. And so I'm really excited to see how this game comes about. And my prediction thus far, just looking at this image, is that this game would be a combination of Glass Road and Mercator. And so hopefully we get some more information and confirmation soon on this game. I'm really excited to see how this turns out, if this is truly something that is coming down the road. So speaking of Mercator, let's get into the review of it, and I'm happy to say that I finally acquired a copy of this out-of-print game. So I apologize for those who may have heard of this game for the first time as you listen or watch this, or if you are interested in this game and it's too expensive for you, haven't found a copy yet, I do apologize, but I was able to locate a copy pretty close to me, and as it happens to be my birthday month, I decided to take the plunge and spend some money for it. So I will say that I have tried this game prior to purchasing it on Tabletop Simulator, so if you want to try the game out, it is available there, and my plays of it have been primarily solo thus far. I haven't played the multiplayer yet, but I would say that a good 90%, 95% of the game is as it is mechanically solo as it is in the multiplayer, so I don't think it's going to be very different, but I will update you if it is. So as a quick overview in Mercator, you are merchants in Europe during the rise of Hamburg in the 30 Years' War, using order fulfillment to represent trading goods. You also travel across a map to collect goods to trade in a pick-up-and-deliver fashion. The game ends as soon as time runs out, or when the highest contract is taken, and I will explain that, all of this, in the game highlights to come. So first of all, for game highlights, contract fulfillment. The catch in this game is that when you fulfill a contract on your board, each contract has a number assigned to it, starting at 2 and going all the way up to 10, with the highest game-ending contract at 14. And when you fulfill a contract, you get a contract of the next higher number from the top of the pile that it's on. The contracts get harder to fulfill the higher the numbers are, so the game feels like it is having you progress over time through harder and harder contracts, rather than rinsing and repeating with just different similar level style contracts the whole game. And these higher contracts give you more money to be able to do things during the game, like buying buildings, etc. The second aspect of this game is quote-unquote time travel, and no, this is not like an acronym. When you travel to a certain city, you either gain or lose time markers, so you need to save up time tokens to get to certain spaces on the board. In addition, when another player goes to a location, you can spend your own tokens to travel with that player and take goods or fulfill contracts while you're there. When you take time tokens from the supply, occasionally it'll tell everyone to lose a good from their supply based off of the overall, the major rule set, and I'll get into some variations later. But eventually the time tokens will, on the time tracker board, will run out, thus leading to the end of the game, or one of the ways that this game end can trigger. The third thing about this game is the multi-use goods. So each color of good comes from one major location on the central board, and the colors can represent different goods on your personal tableau where you decide to store those cubes. Each color having two different icons they can represent, or two different versions of the same color, like the color green cubes representing both muskets and clothing, for example. The contracts you fulfill have to do with the color and the icons they represent, and so there are some decisions to be made when collecting goods and assigning them to your different silos on your board to be able to think ahead and plan which contracts you want to fulfill, etc. Fourth, the building and bonus cards. So along the way, you can use money that you have acquired from fulfilling contracts to buy bonus cards to give you extra goods when visiting certain cities. Also, you can use money to buy building cards, which have different unique requirements to be able to purchase them in addition to the cost, but they give you major points, just straight up victory points, for the endgame. Then finally, variations of play. So the solo game differs from the main game, where instead of using money to buy contracts, you use the contracts themselves, and the number that is assigned to these contracts as the currency that you use to acquire different things during the game. You can play a long game versus a short game. You can alter the different rules of the game, like how many contracts or cards you can hold in your hand, how the time tokens are used, etc. So you can tailor the experience based off of preference. Going into game comparisons, so the first game that I thought of was Splendor. Take the basic idea of contract fulfillment and think of Mercator utilizing a similar feeling to Splendor, where additional contracts fulfilled means you have better opportunities to fulfill bigger contracts later on, as you do in Splendor, where as you collect these acquired contracts that you've fulfilled with your gems, it increases your base amount of currency that you can utilize to purchase bigger contracts later on. So it happens a little differently in each game, with Mercator being a little bit more complicated with its progressing order contract scheme rather than just collecting gems and turning them into resources that you can utilize later on. But the gist, I think, is kind of the same, where you are making progress towards bigger and bigger contracts. The second game that I remember most recently having a component of traveling around a map for resources is Lacrimosa from Devere. And it closely resembles Mercator, using some sort of resource like money in Lacrimosa as well as time in Mercator to move your character across a shared board where you are traveling across a geographic area and collecting resources and bonuses along the way. So that is kind of represented in both games. Next comparison is Race for the Galaxy. So the small tie in between Mercator and games like Race for the Galaxy, or other games that I thought of like Earth as well, is that the action taken by the current player may be followed by or utilized in conjunction with other players optionally. So, and this is a reference to the fact that as you travel to a location, you get to pay the player a token, a time token or two, depending on the location that you're going to, in order to utilize that location for goods or fulfilling contracts. And so paying attention to where your opponents are going is helpful and crucial to being efficient with your game, and keeps you involved during other players' turns in a not as upfront and straightforward way as Race for the Galaxy does, but it does help keep that downplay feeling minimized to a degree. And then finally, Patchwork is my last comparison, which happens to be a Rosenberg game as well, but both games share an element of time as a resource. With Mercator, the time tokens dictating the end of the game and allowing you to go to certain locations as well is one way the game can end, if not by the other way, which is obtaining the last contract, which is the Peace of Westphalia, which gives you some bonus points there. So there are two different ways to end the game, but one of them does revolve around time. And Patchwork is similar, where the time track and the game end trigger of the game is variable based off of how fast you are progressing on the time track board that is shared between the two players in Patchwork, and that is based off of the tiles that you purchase and place onto your board, which each tile has an amount of spaces on the time track that you move forward with. So every game will be variable, and how many turns you play and how long the games will be based off of how fast you move through when purchasing tiles in Patchwork or utilizing those time tokens in Mercator. So there are probably some other games that do utilize time as a resource, not necessarily in a thematic sense, but in the physical resource version. I can't think of any of those right now, but Patchwork, fortunately, by the same designer, kind of fits that bill. So going into the peer review, a lot of these reviews came from, you know, years before when the game was hotter and more readily available, but I think it still stands the test of time of how people felt about the game and how it would be represented today. So some praise that the game received many years back was, and I should mention that this game was published in 2010. But anyway, many people praised this game as a departure from the usual theme and mechanisms at the time, strategically with multiple ways to win the game, either going down the order fulfillment route and collecting those contracts for money and points versus focusing mostly on buildings and etc., or a mix of the two. A lot of people mention that this game shines at two players, where competitive decisions seem to be at their best and the turns are a little bit more snappy and there is quicker gameplay, which is very comparable to his other games that seem to be best at two, such as the base game of A Feast for Odin, and obviously his two-player-only games like Fields of Arl. The play and rules are elegant in Mercator, and some people really enjoy the variations in rules, finding something that really tailors and fits their game style best with themselves as well as their regular groups. There are some concerns, though, and many people disparage the look of the game. It is abstracted with the art, the very beige color of the game, the minimalistic thematic integration as well as presentation of components of the game, like just colored cubes instead of a representation of what they might be, which is understandable based off of how those colored cubes are, but still, it does come across as a very basic presentation for visual appearances. Some people don't like how variable the rule set is. They prefer to have one right way to play the game, and that's it. Some people find the game to be too random as well, with contracts, bonus cards, building cards, etc. coming out at different times, and not having a full enough market of a display of these different contracts and cards to choose from, which can really alter your gameplay and be a little bit too tactical for some people to influence their decisions to be competitive. And this is, I think, especially true at higher player counts. And so strategically, in some, people feel that it's a repetitive game, kind of a rinse and repeat. You're just traveling and picking up and delivering, which I guess a lot of pickup and deliver games kind of represent a kind of rinse and repeat format. And it might be a little too light for what it's trying to be presented as, especially in comparison to some of Rosenberg's other heavier Euro titles. So what do I think about Mercator? This game stands out as being mechanically and thematically very different than any other of Rosenberg's games. Perhaps now, you know, in retrospect, there are a lot more industrialized or, say, more economic games that are not agricultural or farming themed, such as Oranienburger Canal or Glass Road, for that matter. And so it made me think, why didn't this very unique game did not appeal to as many people back then when it was released, and hence it not receiving the love that perhaps it could have received in the form of reprints and different versions like some of his other games have received since. Sure, the artwork and table presence are a bit dull, but as soon as I started to understand how the different mechanisms of the game play together, taking aside the presentation of the game, with the way that you upgraded contracts throughout the game and having that being progressed from easier contracts to harder contracts, or using the time tokens to accompany other players' turns, being more aware of what other people are doing on their turns, and multiple rounds to getting victory points and winning the game. I thought that this was at least a very mechanically sound game and elegant game. I've had a lot of fun playing the solo game too. Once again, it doesn't venture too far off of what I believe the multiplayer experience would offer, but it does so in a different and unique way that playing the two versions of the game feel different. It felt a lot like Last Road, making decisions that sometimes you had to take a chance with, because some things, like the order of the cards that you play out in Last Road from your hand in the solo version, is frankly up to chance, and the same thing can happen with the orders in the solo version of Last Road, or the contracts, rather, where the time tracker of the solo version is based off of a deck of the highest numbered contracts being flipped over and made available, and so you can try to plan for a contract to be fulfilled, but you only have one turn to do so before the next card is flipped over, and so there is some chance involved and a lot of tactical reaction to what is being revealed. While trying to mitigate that as minimally as possible is the crux of the solo version of both games, and so it does depart from the more deterministic approach of the multiplayer versions of both games, as well as other Rosenberg games as well. And so there is a unique feeling to how it plays in the solo version, at least. This game ranks highly for me, in general, because of the mechanisms mostly, although there are other Rosenberg games that do top Mercator based off of thematic integration, as well as mechanical play. I do agree that this game does feel a little abstracted, and it is relying heavily on the mechanical gameplay. But I found myself energized by the comments from those who love this game for what it mechanically is, saying how strategic and deep this game can get, especially as you play in a two-player setting. It's a quick game too, falling around the same playtime as Glass Road, if not a little bit longer, and perhaps around the same time as New Sphered and Idiwa, which is a bonus for me because it's easier to get this out and to fully teach and play this game with friends on a weeknight with a limited game time. So in sum, I think this game has some neat mechanisms that do feel unique, not only for what I believe games were at the time, perhaps drawing and being influenced by games of the time, such as Race for the Galaxy. I believe there are some influences there from those games from, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But I do believe there are some unique features that are brought to the table that are unique to this game that aren't found in any other games that I at least have played or am aware of recently, and from 10, 15 years ago as well. And so it's a game, and this is represented by how broadly I've had to compare this game to in order to make comparisons from the different mechanisms and highlights from this game. And so in and of itself, Mercator is a very unique and very interesting addition to the Rosenberg Big Box line. And there are probably some games from 10, 15 years ago that resemble Mercator, and I am just not aware of, but at least from my perspective, I'm happy to have this in my collection and keep it, not only because of the monetary, you know, investment that I made into it being an out-of-print game, but I think it is a game that I can pull out and teach people and still have them enjoy the experience, even though it does not have the flashy and updated and modernized art that a lot of games have, component-wise as well. The quality baseline has definitely elevated since then, but I think mechanically this game has a lot to offer that can be a real fun time for players who play it for the first time and aren't familiar with these different styles and genres of gameplay, such as pick up and deliver. And it being a pick up and deliver game that is so unique from Rosenberg's repertoire as well, it's something that I do enjoy, and I feel good about having it in my collection so I can play it solo, I can play it with other players, and have a different experience versus all of the other farming-related games that I have on the shelf. And so, speaking of that, let's go into the top 10 non-Rosenberg farming games. So when you mention Uwe Rosenberg, many people will think Farming Simulator. From his earliest board game hits, such as Bonanza and Agricola, to his latest designs of Hallertau and Idiwa, there seems to be an element of farming or agriculture to most of his games. From raising crops and caring for animals, to managing a homestead or a ranch, these farming games played a big role in hooking me to not only his games, but into the board game hobby in general. And they are a nostalgic part of me as well, especially reminding me of the video games that I played a lot in my youth, such as Harvest Moon. And so there's an element of coziness to the farming theme that I really enjoy every time I play these games, having nice bluegrass music in the background with, you know, just a, like the feeling you're sitting on your porch overlooking a prairie or your farmstead, you know. It does something right for me that makes me want to come back and be in this environment when it comes to board games. Now, Rosenberg isn't the only person, obviously, who has designed a farming game. So this list is going to be the top 10 farming games rated by players over time on BoardGameGeek, filtering out any of the Rosenberg games along the way. And there were quite a lot. BoardGameGeek defines a farming game as, quote, games that encourage players to build and manage farmland for the purposes of growing crops and or tending to livestock, often to be sold or traded later on. And so as I go through this list, I'll react to each of these games in, you know, descending order from 10 to 1 with my thoughts on them if I've played them or what people have to say about them if I have not played the game yet. Of note, there are 1,250 games at the time of recording with the categorization of farming according to BoardGameGeek. The highest ranked game with farming in this entire list is Rosenberg's A Feast for Odin, by the way, which I considered to be less of a farming game and more of, well, a thematic Viking game, I suppose, but I do see the tie-ins with farming and crops and agriculture and things like that. So anyway, another note is, as I was making this list, there were highly rated games that had a small or insignificant amount of farming to it, in my opinion. So I decided to skip them and place them on an honorable mention type of list, and so I won't go into these with any detail. But anyway, these games include Zulkin, Village, Above and Below, Goa, Santa Maria, Madeira, Boon Lake, Aegizia, Cacao, Cuba, and Mermes. Once again, skipping Rosenberg games and any repeats from his games, as well as any of these other games that I've mentioned, or different versions of them as well. So let me know if you think I should have included these games in a top 10 farming game list. I have played some of these games, and some of that is based off of my opinion, as well as a quick overview of what the game is trying to accomplish. A lot of these games, in my opinion, are more trading and economic based rather than focusing in on the actual farming or agriculture depicted in the game. You know, there are resources that are featured that include wheat and things like that, but I felt like they did not define the farming genres or category as well as I think some of these other games did. And so if you disagree with me, just let me know. So number 10 for me is going to be Beer and Bread. This is ranked 808 overall, and this is a Scott Alms game released in 2022. And this was one of my personal favorites from that year. In this two-player only game, you manage your side of an opposing village, brewing beer and making bread, using multi-use card play to do so. I like the resource management, the card play, and the quickness of this game, and I think it represents the farming theme well, by especially with the alternating years and rounds between good and not-so-good years of harvest, altering the way that you draft cards to your hand as well. So this is a very fun game, and I think it represents farming well. Number 9 is Three Sisters. This is a game designed in 2022 by Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle, overall ranked at 743. And this is a roll and write game where you roll the dice and cross out areas on your sheet, mainly focus on growing the trio of pumpkin, corn, and beans, and by advancing on other tracks to help you do so and gain points in different ways. It's a medium weight, thinky roll and write that I had fun trying out a few years ago, and I've reviewed it on the podcast, but it's one that I haven't returned to since. I think the element of resource management is here, as it is in some of my favorite roll and writes, and it does help the farming theme come through, and I think if I were to try it again and pull it out, I would enjoy the chance that I had to do so. Number 8 is Vinus. This game is ranked 611 and is a Lacerda game from 2010. I've played this game only once, and there's a huge comparison to another game that's coming up later on this list that you probably know about, but I thought this game was really fun, and it's a heavy cultivation simulator type of game where you're growing grapes in different areas of Portugal and using the wine that you make from these grapes in different ways, utilizing an interesting grid-like action selection mechanism. So it's not my favorite Lacerda, but it's one that I would definitely return to, and that farming theme, cultivation theme, right, definitely helps. Number 7 is Takenoko. This game is ranked 381 overall, and it is designed by Antoine Baza. back in 2011. In this game, you are collectively controlling a farmer and a panda on a tile modular board, growing bamboo and eating it respectively, all while trying to fulfill contracts and score points. It's a lightweight family game that has some randomness to it with dice rolls, which makes it fun and inclusive to those who aren't, you know, very competitive gamers or deeper into the hobby. And as there are other family weight games that I would go to first when comparing it to Takenoko, maybe I think that's due to the randomness of the game, but visually on the table, it's a really good looking game. It's one of the first games that I've ever played, actually, in the wider board game space, and so it still retains a fond memory for me. It's not one that I return to often enough, but I've had good success teaching this to non-gamers and having a good time with them. Number 6 is Heaven and Ale. This game is ranked 342 overall and is a Michael Kiesling game from 2017. I haven't played this one, but I think it is an interesting rondel game where the timing of brewing beer makes the difference, according to the description of the game. The overall mechanisms I'm not 100% familiar with, but if the description is anywhere near accurate to the gameplay, I think simulating the timing aspect of brewing beer and making sure that it has had enough time to ferment and etc. is what I think represents thematically the game well, and perhaps mechanically it makes this game interesting. So, you know, the jury is still out to see if this game, in my opinion, reflects the agricultural world as a whole, but it does seem like to be a well-received mechanical game anyway, and so I'm excited to try this one at some point. Number 5 is La Granja. This is a 2014 game from Ode and Keller that is ranked 239 overall and is one of my favorite non-Rosenberg games. Farm tableau management, mediated by individualized multi-use cards and contract fulfillment, makes this game very fun every time that I've played it, and I've played it on Board Game Arena as well, which is available for free. I've reviewed El Burro, the sequel to this game, as well as the Kickstarter version of La Granja a few years back, and so you can go and check out my thoughts there. But there's a good following for this game, I feel, and love for the overall design, which is another testament of how great this game is. Probably out of all the games here, it most closely on this list, it closely resembles my favorite Rosenberg game of all time, Agricola, especially with the identity-driven cards that this game boasts. Number 4 is Glenmore 2 Chronicles. This game was released in 2019, and it is a sequel to Glenmore, designed by Matthias Kramer, ranked 169 overall, and I've played the original Glenmore once on yukata.de, another online version of ways to play the game. And so I get the gist of this game, where you're using a rondel and advancing as far as you would like to build out your tableau with tiles, adding farming-type resources like wheat and cattle, and then using those to trade for goods and points, and, you know, rinse and repeat. The rondel, I think, makes this game feel unique, and especially at the time of the original game, which was way back when. And the sequel adds a campaign element introducing new mechanisms to the game. I think there are 7 or 8 different modules that you can add on to the game from this sequel. So this is one that I need to try out for sure in its complete whole, and especially if it ranks so high as a sequel game. I think there is a lot of good gameplay here. Number 3 is Clans of Caledonia. This is a Juma al-Juju game from 2017 that is ranked 64 overall. And gameplay-wise, it resembles Terra Mystica and Gaia Project the most. I prefer Clans over those other games because of the interesting market, where prices rise and fall dynamically based off who sells or buys certain resources, and the farming aspect of placing resources like cattle, sheep, and wheat, and upgraded resources from those like cheese and bread, onto a shared board and turning them in for contracts or other ways to do well in this game. This is definitely a deep game with resource management and tight interactive board play that I really find enjoyable, and as a whole in the hobby, people do enjoy it, obviously because of its overall ranking and its similarity to very popular games in Gaia Project and Terra Mystica. It does have a new expansion coming soon, so that'll add some new mechanisms of play that I can't wait to try out at some point. Number 2 is Puerto Rico. This game is ranked 44 overall and was once the number 1 game on BoardGameGeek, created in 2022 by Andreas Seyfarth. Despite the controversial theme, the gameplay is fun enough, with a farming theme included in the plantation that you are managing, and the mechanism of the leader or the governor of the table, you know, choosing a action while everyone gets to play out a minor version of that action, which I think was, you know, original at the time and really popularized further by games like Race for the Galaxy and others afterward. I think I prefer the quick card play of Race for the Galaxy more than Puerto Rico, and something about the overall strategic and very competitive aspect of Puerto Rico, where if you do not play correctly, you really mess up the mojo of the other competitive players, and so it's not beginner friendly, which, you know, has paradoxically has turned me off of this game, as Agricola is not a very beginner friendly game either. But I do appreciate the fact that this game is getting new versions of it very recently in the past couple of years, alternate versions of the base game, as well as reiterations of Puerto Rico as well, have been coming out recently. Another one is slated to come out either this year or next, and so it deserves a lot of love for the gameplay itself, and it deserves a look from you if you haven't played it. The number one ranked game behind A Feast for Odin, of course, in the farming category is Viticulture. The number one on this list anyway is Viticulture. So this is ranked 38. This is a Jamie Stegmaier game from 2013 originally, but the Essential Edition, the second edition essentially, was released back in 2015, including key expansions from previous expansions into the Essential version, as well as adding the experience of bigger expansions like Tuscany. And so this is a worker placement card-driven cultivation game, similar to Vinus, where you are cultivating grapes and making wine and delivering that wine via order contracts, etc. I have said my piece about this game before. I really do enjoy it, as it approximates Agricola, as well as, you know, how I feel La Granja approximates Agricola with the card play and the agricultural theme. There is more of a random feel to the card play rather than the deterministic play style of Agricola, in my opinion. And this, however, in a positive note, creates for play lines and routes to victory that feel different every time you play Viticulture. You don't have to go down the create wine and deliver and fulfill contracts route to winning this game. You can play based off of the cards or other different ways on your tableau to score points. And so I really appreciate the fact, and it's a testament to why this game is so highly ranked and is beloved by many. So there you have it. Those are the top 10 farming games that are not Rosenberg made, and my reactions to them. Once again, if you disagree with the ones that I left out on this list, just let me know. Or let me know if one of these games are your favorite and why you enjoyed as well in the comments below. But that will do it, and that is a wrap for the Rosenblog for March 2024. Thank you for consulting with me, and hope that you schedule an appointment with your board gaming doctor real soon. Take care.